This week we hear the fifth part of Yaroslava Skleničková's moving memoirs, If I Had Been a Boy, I Would Have Been Shot, read by the Czech-British actress Veronica Hicks. After the assassination of the Nazi Reichsprotector of Bohemia and Moravia, the Butcher of Prague, Reinhard Heydrich, the Czech village of Lidice was chosen for complete destruction on the night from the 9th to the 10th of June 1942. Yaroslava, or Yari, was among 184 women from the village sent to the Ravensbrück concentration camp. David Vaughan gives us the story so far.
The women of Lidice are gradually getting used to life in Ravensbrück, making friends with prisoners in other parts of the camp and other work groups. Yashi finds herself made to do a variety of jobs, and she comes to learn how important solidarity is among the prisoners. She also begins to understand the arbitrariness and cruelty of the prison guards, and how important it is not to attract their attention. Veronica Hicks reads.
The arrival of more and more transports of women prisoners caused confusion in the listings of the available workforce. Above all, it was essential to select younger women capable of work for the factories producing ammunition, just being built in Germany. The Lagerkommandant, commander of the camp, ordered all women prisoners who were not working anywhere to turn up at the Lagerovka for a roll call. So that not even a mouse could escape, an overseer stood between all the barracks, accompanied by camp police. I was without employment, but I needed to be placed quickly somewhere in a job, so that in some future transport I would not be sent to the ammunition factory, in some subsidiary of the camp, where, apart from hard work, there was the danger of frequent bombings and severed contacts with the main camp. In the end, I was given a job as a kolonka, head of a working column, which kept in good order the paths and grassy areas inside the camp. The work was not hard, but it seemed to me without any purpose. It was October, piercing cold weather. Even though we'd been given winter clothing, that is, striped dresses with long sleeves, and a striped jacket without lining, flannel underwear, knitted stockings, and wooden clogs, that did not warm us much. In my working group, I got 20 Ukrainian women, who were indistinguishable from each other. Shaved hair, and each wearing a scarf tied in the same way. I felt sorry for them, and the way they shivered, in inadequate clothing. I got the idea of keeping only 10 of them at work, while the others kept warm indoors. But they had to remember themselves, with whom they'd had to take turns. I stood on the corner, and kept a lookout. When the guard approached, then I seemingly urged them and told them what they had to do. As soon as the overseer was out of sight, we chatted, and I learned of their fates. Of course, I did not understand Ukrainian or Russian, but in the camp, the language of communicating among the Slavonic nations was Camp Slavonic, words adopted from each of the languages, and how well we understood each other. When this working column was dissolved, I was set in the group levelling out the surroundings of the camp. We carried soil along railway lines in metal trucks, similar to those used in mines. It was work that was really laborious, particularly for my legs, which were beginning to fail me. As a child, I had congenital dislocation of the hips. Dragging about heavy cauldrons in the kitchen, standing for ages at the roll call, and now all day long on my feet, all had caused some more damage, and I could barely walk. I was in great pain, and in the end, all I could do was to go to the Revere, the infirmary, in December 1943. The SS doctor got very much interested in my story, and so he had an X-ray made of my hips, on which appeared a quantity of patches the size of a small coin. He asked me where I was working, and I was given another card saying, Für Außenarbeit umgeeignet und von Lastentragen befreit. Grund, Hüftgelenk Luxation. I was to be excused from outside work and the carrying of heavy burdens for 1 year because of dislocation of the hip joint. I had no idea that it placed me into the files of prisoners earmarked for liquidation. If a certain woman from Brno who worked in the Revier office had not destroyed my card in 1944, I would have most likely perished in the gas chamber. Once again, I was without work. Then one day, a German prisoner came from the camp work office and was looking for skilled dressmakers for the ready-made clothing factory in Fürstenberg, about 5 kilometers from the concentration camp. Danuta put my name down on the list, though I objected that I did not know much about sewing, let alone on machines. She told me, "Remember that in the camp you know how to do anything and everything." I must admit that the night before starting work, I slept very badly, for fear of how it would turn out. But if a person wants to, and must, he will really learn anything. So even I mastered sewing on an electric machine. And in fact, I was the only one to use a 2-needle sewing machine. 100 of us were taken to the Grahl firm in Fürstenberg. Every morning, a lorry with a trailer came for us, driven by 2 French prisoners. Closely packed together, we stood in rain or snow, wind and frost, in the open lorry, without tarpaulin. We were allocated work in the factory, which was inspected by civilian seamstresses. Some of them were very evil, and all of them firmly required the daily quota. At midday, they brought us food from the camp, and for that we had a 30-minute break. After 12 hours of work, we returned to the camp in the same way. Once, during the winter, we were awaited on our return at the entrance to the camp by several guards, who at once started to search us. We were not allowed to bring anything from the working column, but they'd got the idea of finding out if we were wearing only the regulation camp clothing. I felt uneasy, because my aunt had received a parcel from home containing hand-knitted woolen underwear, which she'd given me because it was too narrow for her. It helped me to protect my sore hips from getting chilled. I could already see that the guard would not only confiscate it, but in addition, she would put my name down for punishment. Just then I noticed that one of them was only checking what we were wearing at the top. Straight away I stepped out to her to be inspected. I'm mentioning this incident to demonstrate that a person in the concentration camp never knew the day or hour when one of the overseers would think up a reason to humiliate and punish. Notorious in this respect was the senior guard, Binz, who had entered service when she was 19. I do not know what she did before, but I could observe especially on her what can happen to a person who unexpectedly gets absolute power over other people. And I was astonished. When I'd been working for Grahl several months, they stopped dividing prisoners into barracks according to their nationality. The new division was according to the working columns, and so Mila had to go to the block housing the so-called Dachau Betriebe. With the help of my friend Janina, who had an acquaintance in the work office of the camp, I managed at least to get my mamma to work for Grahl. She had been selected several times for the transport, and no one ever knew whether it meant transport to the ammunitions factory or to Poland, to the gas chamber. Thanks to the contacts I had with the Polish women, I was always able to save her from those transports. They had not forgotten that I too had more than once, when I was still working in the kitchen, stuck my neck out, and now and again smuggled out some food for them. On other occasions, too, I met with such demonstrations of gratitude and good memory. Once, before my return from Graal, I felt ill. I suffered high fever. I started to stagger and could scarcely keep on my feet. How I must have looked is clear from the fact that the overseer had a wooden box brought to the lorry for me to sit on, and she kept her eye on me for the whole journey. She probably thought that they would not bring me to the camp alive. When I got to the Revere, the thermometer showed I had 41 degrees centigrade. They diagnosed me with dysentery, and so I was moved into the hospital block. I was placed right at the back, even though I had to run constantly to the lavatory. Here the block leader was a Dutch girl, who was earlier with the French group. She recognized me, came to me, and promised to put me somewhere else in the morning, since mortality was very high in the hospital block. And indeed, in the morning, they placed me in a bed near the door, and what was more, near the window, where my mamma could see me every day.